Sunday, November the 26th, 1961. This is a little report of a pioneer visiting committee of Andrew Wicken, Chairman, Frank Young, and Harry Hughes. We visited the St. Joseph's Hospital and visited with Johnny Erlen and several other old-timers over in the hospital, and then we went around and visited Frank Musano at his house, and we took a look to see that Bill Sherman was in the hospital, and Mrs. Sherman had her wood cut. We took a look around at Victor Hugo, and he seemed to be getting along good, and Rasmussen, the house was closed up, but he was in there in bed, evidently. And then we spent the best part of the afternoon visiting for the pioneers. This is just a little memorandum report.
This is November the 28th,
November 27, 1961 at Fairbanks, Alaska. And this is just a little memorandum notes by Frank Young.
This is the history of the Pioneer Hotel here at Fairbanks. The Pioneer Hotel, the first Pioneer Hotel that was put up on First Avenue, was put up by David Petrie, one of the early day pioneers. And Dave ran the Pioneer Hotel and Bar for a number of years. And before he died, he sold the property to a fellow by the name of George Weber. Weber, by the way, was one of the later to become one of the first moving picture men in Fairbanks. That is, he after Dick Thorne, who was the first picture man, that is, picture show on Second Avenue, then Oscar Weber got into that also. But Weber took over the Pioneer Hotel and ran it for a number of years. And he sold out to Tibbetts and Bill Keller, and they run it for quite a number of years. And then finally Keller bought Tibbetts' interest, and Bill ran the place for quite a few years. Then Charlie Peterson, who used to be a mechanic in the machine shop for the NC company here, the old NC machine shop, he ran it for a number of years. And then he sold out to George Gilbertson and Art Anderson, and they ran the place for a number of years until it burnt down and has never been rebuilt.
All right, now do you remember about the famous bar that was in there, the bar they brought down from Dawson? Can you tell a little bit of that?
Well, I know they brought the bar down from Dawson, and it was a very famous piece of furniture, all made out of mahogany, and it was a beautiful thing. But I don't recall whether somebody had bought it before the fire or not, or whether it burned up in the fire.
It burned up in the fire.
I'm pretty sure that it did burn up in the fire.
I've seen it many times.
It was one of the bars from the old M&M that was built in Dawson in the early days, 98 or 99. It brought into Dawson under great expense. I was told that that bar cost $150,000. And but Harry says here that it burned up in the hotel fire, which I think it did.
You remember about what year that was brought down and how it was brought down on the river?
Well, it was brought down by boat to Fairbanks, and to keep the parts of it in the large sections cost an awful lot of money to bring it here. It come down in 1905. And I know when they were unloading it down at the old, we used to call it the Pioneer Dock, the old White Seal Dock that was right out in front of the old Pioneer Hotel. It took 40 or 50 men to pick up sections of it and pack it in there and get it into place.
If that bar could talk, it would tell a real history, because there's very few miners and early timers that didn't go into that bar.
That's right. I played in an orchestra in there one time with Scotty Dalton. That was, I was told that he was a relation of Jack Dalton of the old Dalton Trail. There was a fellow come in there, made a stake up on Wild River, a Koyukuk. His name was Fred Swift, and he stayed with it there for 2 days and nights and spent over $40,000. Drinking champagne.
It wasn't unusual for a miner to come in and treat the town.
Well, he did. Everybody come in, it was all on the house. In other words, he was paying for everything. And, yes, that old Pioneer, if it was here today, it could talk, and there'd be some great stories told there.
There was actually more mining done in the bar than there was on the creeks.
That's right. Yeah, well, Harry, that's about all I can remember of it.
This little memorandum is just so we won't forget the things as they come to mind.
This is November the 29th, 1961, and this is a memorandum of information concerning the Pioneer Park of Igloo 4. The Park and Recreation Cemetery Commission of the City of Fairbanks met and presented the Pioneers Park project with their endorsement and their approval, and also voted to submit a letter of endorsement to the State Division of Lands of Alaska. Also, I have a copy of the minutes of the Park and Recreation and Cemetery Commission, and a copy of the City Council minutes of November 27th, 1961, in which this recommendation was read to the Council, to the Fairbanks City Council. This is just a memorandum on this tape by Harry Hughes, Chairman of the Park and Recreation Committee of the Pioneers of Alaska Eagles 4.
This is a memorandum of Harry Hughes and Earl Pilgrim. I spent most of this afternoon with Pioneer Earl Pilgrim at the University of Alaska in the assay office. He was having some ore assayed from his area of the Cantishna over there where the new road is built, in the hopes of creating some interest and making an opportunity for someone else to go mining in this country. We reminisced over old times and old mining information, and the University Assay Office has a complete set of the geological and mining reports clear back to 1908. And some of the copies in the years gone by I used to obtain from the U.S. Printing Office at Washington, D.C. and read them before I went into an area. I used to learn all about the area before I even went into it. I was never lost any time in Alaska, and I don't believe a person that will spend a little time doing research will ever get lost in Alaska. Well, I had a wonderful afternoon and met several of the members of the university out there, and we reminisced about early things around McKinley Park and the old trappers up in that country when there used to be a lot of people in the Cantishna and Stampede District and clear down as far as Lignite and McKinley Park area. This is just a little memorandum of our trip today. Harry Hughes, Igloo 4. This is the end.
This is November the 29th, 1961. At 8 o'clock this evening, Frank Young, myself, attended a meeting in the Denali School in regard to the water development and other development of the tract around where the Pioneer Park and Museum is located. The city has redrawn their water distribution system to show that the water lines will pass in the 300-foot right-of-way alongside Airport Road through this Pioneer Park project, as was first suggested. The people from Taku and Westgate and the immediate area there that attended, there was about 25 people of that area, and I would estimate that there's probably 400 to 500 people living in the area, and there was only that few that showed up. But the questions and answers, the questions mainly were the cost, the enormous cost of distributing water in a sparsely settled area. That was one point that was made, and whether the people can afford it. So the council is planning on placing this question on the ballot for the people to decide. No matter which they do, the park project, as planned, will improve and enhance and make it more desirable for development. The State Department of Lands is holding the school section just southeast of that, southwest of that project for future development. It has not been subdivided and has a hold on it at the moment. It will probably be divided into small tracts to sell as a residential development area. And then the next section beyond that is being held along Pegger Road as a commercial industrial development area off of Airport Road, about 600 feet or a little further. From there on out, Pegger Road will be a future industrial development according to the present planning. The city has written in to the overall planning the Pioneer Park and Museum project as a part of the development now, which I will obtain copies of for the record. This is Harry Hughes reporting on a meeting tonight with the city officials on this sewer development project in Westgate and Taku. This was November 29th, 1961. This is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4.
This is December 3rd. It's cold. 1961. And this is Harry Hughes and Frank Young, and we're visiting with Mother Oates out at 33 Mile on the Richland Highway at her home. And
Mr. Oates passed away some time ago, and he's a very famous old-timer. He's worked on all the Nome and Fairbanks area in the early days here.
This is
Mother Oates.
Huh?
You got married in Tanana.
Yeah.
Mother Oates?
You know? Huh?
Go ahead and talk.
When the bridge, you know, Ninana Bridge,
yeah.
He helped us to make that bridge across.
That was 1923, wasn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, that fall, about September, we got married.
Mm-hmm. Now, where was you born first?
In Koyukuk.
You was born in Koyukuk, and what was your maiden name?
It was Lillian Marks.
Lillian Marks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then when did you meet Mr. Oates, when you got married?
In Tanana.
You met him in Tanana.
Mm-hmm.
And what, do you remember what year that was? About?
Well, it was 1912.
1912. And then you went from Tanana when you got married to where?
Everywhere.
Oh, you were all over the interior.
Yeah.
He worked here in NC, and he worked when they built the first powerhouse here.
Uh-huh. The blacksmith in NC in here, and we went to Koyukuk, and he was engineer in Koyukuk, and we come out again, he was freedom for NC.
Now listen, tell me what your family's name was, how many children you raised.
And who is the oldest? Who's the oldest?
Timmy.
Timmy's the oldest. Mm-hmm. And what's the next one?
Rose.
Rose. And the next one?
Joseph.
Joseph. And the next one?
Freddie.
And Freddie?
That's all.
Just four. Mm-hmm. And you're down here living in the cabin, sort of by yourself, but Joe and his family lives close by you. Joseph and his family lives
mm-hmm.
close by you.
Mm-hmm.
And you occupy yourself with making fur garments and packing your own wood.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go ahead and talk. Tell me what you do.
Now what I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just say that you're getting along all right. You living here now since your husband has...
Tell about your lonesomeness, and you know, and it's kind of lonely.
Yeah.
It ain't the same as it used to be.
No.
Let me ask you. Was you with Joe coming down to Kaikuk at the time that he found the Blueberry Kid's boat?
No, I was in Tananaden.
Tanana. Mm-hmm. Joe was the one that found the boat, wasn't he?
Joe and Deacon. Johnny Deacon.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Native boy.
Yeah, were the bodies on the boat at that time?
No.
But
just the boat
sunk.
They found the boat sink. It was, what is that girl name? He was...
Dutch Marie?
Dutch Marie. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Dutch Marie and other two guys, they all got the gold dust on them.
Yeah, they killed them all.
Killed them for the gold dust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, they don't know who done it.
Well, they figure it's a Blueberry Kid.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh. Blueberry Kid was with them when they pulled out from Wiseman.
Yeah, they never found him after that.
No. You know, I told my old man, we hear that, after, let me see, 6 years ago, we hear Blueberry Kid was in Alaska again. And so I told him, I said, is that the guy? No, he said, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so, no. He got out of the country after that, those killings, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you better terminate.
No, this, Mrs. Oates, I'm going to play this back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a Sunday afternoon visit by some of the pioneers from Igloo Fort, Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
Alaska. Okay, now I'm going to...
This is Frank Young and Harry Hughes at Mile 33, and we're visiting with Mr. Joseph Balch of the Little Salcha Store. And he's a very good neighbor of mine, and we're going to ask him a few questions about himself and his family. Well, Joe, tell me when you come into this area.
Spring of 1946, from the month of April.
In April? What did you do? How did you take up this land?
Took up this land? I got through a range of study.
And my reason for asking these questions, you're doing what the true pioneer does. You start to develop the country.
That's right.
Now, you've raised your family. How many youngsters do you have?
Three as of today.
What's your wife's name? Put the names on there.
Marie
is his wife.
There's a wife, the oldest daughter is Nancy. Middle son is Slinks. Youngster is Janice.
Mm-hmm. Since you've been here, Joe, on this ground, have you been able to raise any profitable crops of any kind?
Yes, we've raised several profitable ones.
Tell about your potatoes.
We have excellent potatoes, the Nota Teton potato. We have had excellent celery, we have excellent cabbage, tomatoes, we have matured corn from seed. That's a sweet type, the Midget Minnesota. We have raised pumpkin, vines there, 20 feet long, 30 and 40 pumpkin to the vine. As a cabbage of Excel quality.
When you started to take up this land, you had to clear every bit of it yourself.
Every inch.
It was nothing but tundra and brush
thunder,
when you started.
Tundra, brush, and timber.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, I want to thank you for these few words. We're trying to record the people we visit on our trips. And your name will go down in history, because these will be put away with the pioneer tapes.
Thanks,
thanks,
Harry.
Joe.
Okay. This is December the 3rd,
1961. Harry Hughes, myself, just returned from a little trip out the highway. We was out to Harry's homestead at mile, what mile is that, Harry? Mile 34. And we had a visitation with Mrs. Joe Oates, wife of a pioneer that passed away here a few years ago. Well, from the time I first seen that part of the country, it's somewhat changed. In those days, there was no homesteads or hardly anybody living along that trail. I call it a trail, but now it's a highway. But in the early days, it used to be the trail. And the contrast is somewhat of a different nature in regards to these new homesteaders coming in and modern electric lights along the highway at the, on these homesteads, and everything has changed. The days when I used to go out there many years ago, it would, with these old Model T's, it'd take the bigger part of the day to make the trip out 40 miles. And Harry and I went out today and we drove about 80 miles and might say approximately 2 hours. Well, Harry, that's about all I have to say. And we had a nice little trip and the weather was nice.
Harry has asked me in regards to the moose situation, if there was as many moose in the early days as there is now. Well, I remember the time that the moose used to go down the main drag, as you'd call it. The time we built my home here, Third Avenue, we was tossing up a log there, and this fellow has helped me. He looked around, and here was a moose walking right down the sidewalk right in front of the house. And the poor guy got so excited, he damn near fell off the up where he was standing. And this moose, anyway, it went on just as unconcerned as it was going to stop and have a little refreshment in some of the gardens that was planted along here. And then a couple of kids come along and started to run after it, and it took off down the road. But there were many, many more moose in the early days than there are now. I would say 2 to 1. That is especially bull moose.
You didn't have to go far out of town to get one.
Oh, no, no, not in them days. Well, you can go out here a couple of miles and get bull moose when the season was open.
Well, Frank, we're going to finish this part of this tape and turn it over. So I give you a chance to hear all these memorandums we put on here.
Frank's going to tell us a little bit about snaring game here instead of using guns to shoot them up.
Well, in the early days, there was a tribe of Indians out at the mouth of the Salt Jacket River by the name of the Salt Jacket Tribe, or they had a village there right pretty close to where the Salt Jacket hit the Tanana. I went out there one day to see an Indian that I knew out there. I used to buy fur in them days, and I went out there to see this Indian. His name was Johnny Sam,
And I went over to the old Chief Moses, and I asked him if Johnny was around. No, he said he'd gone hunting. Well, I said, I was out here about a week ago and to see him, and I said, he told me he had no gun, no ammunition. No, he said he don't need gun. Well, I said, is that right? How's he catch these moose? He snare 'em, he said. So this was a new one to me, so I went over. He told me where Johnny was, a couple of miles inland from the village. And I went in there to see him, and he was quartering up a big camoose that he'd snared. And he set this snare. These moose, in the wintertime, when the snow gets deep, they start to make a regular trail that they go along or use quite often. And he set this snare made out of about a half-inch hemp rope. He said it, he built up a kind of a blind on the trail and put the rope, fixed it.
We've got to turn this over, Frank. Just a second.
The rope. This is Frank continuing that story about the trapping without firearms.
Well, I don't know just how far I got along in this story, but we had a little mishap here, so I'll start back over this story in regards to the Salt Jacket Indians that used to, instead of shooting the moose, they snared the moose. I went up there one fall looking for a native by the name of Johnny Sam that I knew, and old Chief Moses, that was the chief of the tribe there at the mouth of Salt Jacket River, told me that he'd gone hunting. But he told me he's over near Salt Jacket Lake, and he showed me the old trail that used to go in there. By the way, I speak of Salt Jacket Lake, it's now Lake Harding, but in them days, that was Salt Jacket Lake, named by the Indians. But I got in there and I found Johnny, and Johnny had just snared a moose. So he was quartering this moose up, and I was so taken back by this snare that he made to catch this moose that I went over there and took a good look at it, and I had him explain it to me. He made this snare out of, I should think, half or three-quarter inch hemp rope, and he put it on the moose trail, which he knew from, these Indian traits. They know many things about nature sometimes that the white man don't get onto, but he had this snare made of hemp rope tied to a large tree and then put up and away on this trail and camouflaged with some brush. When this moose come along there, why, it would strike him just above the legs or catch him under the neck, and he'd eventually make a wild jump when it would hit him, I suppose, and just the noose would work up on his neck and tighten, choke him to death. But I had seen at that time, I seen the noose and seen the moose and seen the Indian that caught it. So in them days when ammunition was short here in the early days, why, the Indians, sometimes they'd use bow and arrow, but sometimes they would snare these moose. Now, speaking of the Salt Jacket Indians, there's of the old tribe of Chief Moses' tribe there at the mouth of the Salt Jacket River. I knew those Indians there when there was probably 100 in that tribe right there. Now there's only 2 left. And there's the old Indian graveyard up on the side of the hill, which the highway between Fairbanks and Big Della passes right close by. So that's a little story I know about
snaring moose, and I hope it's been interesting to you people to learn that the Indians in them days used to catch moose that way or kill them.
That's located right where Aurora Lodge is today. Right about in that area.
Well, it's a little below
Aurora. A little below Aurora Lodge.
Yeah. Not very far, half a mile.
Do you remember what year that sawmill was put in there at the mouth of the river on the other side of Salty River?
That was put in there in about 1908.
1908?
Yeah, there was two partners, one by the name of Heller, and just a minute, I have to think of this other one. Well, they were both German fellas, they bought the roadhouse from Munson. Munson used to have a roadhouse right there where the little below where the bridge stands now. Munson Roadhouse. And Munson sold out to these two Germans. One was named Heller. I can't recall at the present time the other fellow's name, but they're long since passed away. But Heller still got a son here in the interior around here. I've seen him not too many years ago. He's a young man. He's still in this part of Alaska.
Well, Munson Creek is named after that Munson that had the roadhouse there.
That's right. That Munson.
And that's about 38 miles from town, to 40 miles from town.
That's right, 38 to 40 miles, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of that comments about Munson's roadhouse. This is December the 4th, 1961, and the Pioneers of Alaska Igloo 4 held an election of officers tonight at their regular meeting, and Adolph Stock was elected unanimously to be president for 1962, and William Schaefer was elected to be first vice president, and Harry Hughes was re-elected to second vice president, and Andy Wicken was elected to be chaplain, and Andy Anderson was elected to be historian, and Jack Link was unanimously elected to be secretary. George Vigionich is elected treasurer, and Frank Young and Ted Loftus and Frank Chapters is re-elected to his office as trustee. This is a little memorandum of the meeting tonight at the Pioneers of Alaska Igloo 4. We had a pretty good turnout. There was some new faces that hadn't come for a long time, and some didn't show. When you get in this age, most of us are between the 50s and 70s and 80 and 90 year old. We do well to have a turnout where we get 200 and 300 people, which we did tonight. And we had a very good turnout at the auxiliary. Auxiliary 8. Fairbanks, Alaska. And this is December the 4th, 1961. Just a little memorandum report. This is December the 6th, 1961, and this is a little report, memorandum report, of a meeting of the City Park and Recreation and Cemetery Commission at the Chamber of Commerce log cabin here in Fairbanks at 7:30, and there was an invite to the public to attend it. There was only Jim Bischoff, chairman, and John Holm, and there was Mrs. Boucher and another lady. There was about 7 or 8 people showed up. Also, Dick Strait of the Park Project. So Frank Young Sr., and myself, Harry Hughes, appeared in regard to this Pioneer Park project.
there was considerable business transacted by this committee in regard to expenditures and recreation in the Fairbanks area. There was quite a few projects mentioned. The budget was questioned. By the way, what is a budget? I would like to know. Is it an amount of money that can be acquired, or is it just a figure they reach out and get? Do they, before they consider a budget, do they consider the source of how they're going to get that budget? Do they figure that the public that pays that budget are a part of it, or is it just a little game of create something for individuals? I'm really dumbfounded at some of the proposals. Now, of the people present at that meeting, I don't know of any of the park board that actually owns and have real estate or have paid tax in Fairbanks for any length of time. In fact, most of them own nothing. They're not old residents. There wasn't an old resident or a businessman, a substantial businessman there or represented it. The only persons that were represented that were personal, had personal interest. People that are selling something, people that have a gardening business, they're interested in the park project, and they set the policy for the very jobs they're trying to create. I'm wondering if the taxpayers know what's going on. These are my opinions, and they don't reflect on any individual's integrity. It's just a lack of thought and foresight on the part of our governing body of the city of Fairbanks to appoint or delegate responsibility to people that have no financial responsibility themselves. They're not a substantial supporting citizen of the community. They only have lip service. They have nothing else to give. Now, this little report is just my own opinion, and sometime in later years when you transcribe this, if you check back through the records, you may find that some of these things shouldn't have been allowed to exist, that they're hurting the growth of Fairbanks, they're hurting the security of each individual, they're even hurting our way of life. They're contrary to the intent of our Constitution in that we should respect an individual's right to incentive, initiative, and willingness and attempt to go out and create for himself. These regulatory bodies are nothing more than socialized dictatorship, just on the fringe of dictatorship of some form, not American. And I do hope that this thing will die a natural death like it should and allow individuals to operate and create for themselves as they've been preaching to the world. This is Harry Hughes, and this is just my memorandum on tonight's meeting.
This is Frank Young, Sr. I also attended this meeting of the City Park and Recreation and Cemetery Commission, December the 7th, and at the Chamber of Commerce log cabin. There was many things that come up there that I just didn't agree with, especially the story that in regards to the Graveyard Commission that Everett Patton spoke of, that these people are being buried on top of one another, and the expense of thawing and what have you here that it cost the city to conduct during the winter months here in Fairbanks. I would like to state that most of those fellows up there that are doing this work, they're just not too familiar with the old style of thawing and removing dirt here in Alaska. I would state that if I had a contact to open a grave and fill it in again for $75 per grave, I'm sure that I could make myself a big bunch of money. And I understand the way the situation is at the present time that the individual is charged $125 for the same work. Another thing, now to get back to the Pioneer Park that us pioneers are trying to create. I spoke a few words about it down there, but I was interrupted and didn't get a chance to just say what I thought I'd like to say. Since I've been in Fairbanks here, I've seen many parks, baseball fields, and other amusement places started by the city and then the people of Fairbanks. But as time went on, for lack of maintenance or funds from the city to take care of the parks, playgrounds, why they went gradually deteriorated and went back to a weed patch. And what we're trying to get at in regards to pioneers, if we could get this piece of land down there, the state would help to finance part of it, and if we could get the university interested in it and take over the biggest part of it, or part of it, the educational part, why the university will be eligible for grants to maintain it. And I think if we could get going on that line, we could make a go of this so-called Pioneer Park. Well, Harry, that's about all I want to say at the present time.
Well, all in all, what do you think of this meeting?
Well, all in all, in regards to the meeting, I don't think too much of it. I think that these people, they've never stopped to wonder, well, where's all this money coming from? Who's putting it up? If it's us taxpayers, why, I think the taxpayers themselves should have a little voice in it, not these people that don't own any property here in Fairbanks. This is Frank Young Sr. speaking, personal memorandum. This is December the 7th meeting. 1961,
Fairbanks, Alaska.
Frank Young Sr. here is a member of Pioneers of Alaska Igloo 4. He's a resident of Fairbanks since about 1904 and was raised in this country. He's a trustee in the Grand Igloo of the Pioneers of Alaska and a trustee in the Igloo 4 and also a past president of Igloo 4.
This is Harry Hughes commenting on this tape for historical research of Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska. And these are personal memorandums.
Okay. December the 12th, 1961, at Fairbanks, Alaska. This evening will be a special meeting of the Pioneer Park and Museum Board of Igloo 4.
At this meeting, present are Frank Young, Ted Loftus, Jack Link, Secretary of Igloo 4, and Andrew Wickham, Chaplain of Igloo 4, and Harry Hughes, Chairman of Committee on Pioneer Park. Tom Jones said he could not attend the meeting, but he would go along with anything that was voted on here. Sig Wold said that he could not attend the meeting, but he would go along with anything here. And also, President Forbes Baker stated that he would agree with anything we vote on here tonight on this committee. Now, I'll stop this tape and we'll proceed with the meeting.
This meeting was called to order at 7:45
p.m. and present were Ted Loftus, Frank Young, Andrew Wickham, Jack Link, and Harry Hughes, chairman. This letter from the Department of Natural Resources was read, dated November the 22nd, 1960, was read in full and commented on, considerable discussion, subject to Resolution 18,
Ted Loftus made a motion that we accept the conditions of the letter presented by the
intent
of the letter presented by the land office, and Frank Young seconded the motion, and we voted on it, and it was unanimous that we go along with the suggested resolution or letter from the land office.
There being a quorum present, we completed the discussion on this, and we're going ahead and present this letter and resolution to the Historical Society and take it up at the next regular meeting of Igloo 4, and we'll have an action on it and present the land office with a letter from the Igloo affirming our voting here.
Colin McDonald wishes to report that he will vote in the affirmative on this letter submitted by the state to Pioneers Igloo 4, a member of the committee. That's all you want on here?
There being a motion presented to adjourn, we will now adjourn and proceed with our visiting. This is December the 12th, 1961, at Fairbanks, Alaska, and this is a meeting of the Pioneers Igloo 4 Park and Monument Committee. This is the end of this report. This is Harry Hughes, Pioneer Park Museum Committee Chairman. These are a little personal memorandum of what transpired tonight. We were fully in accord with the letter presented by the State Land Office, Mr. Joe Lawler, custodian of Fairbanks, presented to us or sent mail to us. And there was only one little feeling that showed itself slightly, was the question of including the total amount of land as proposed at the State Land Office on our previous meeting, that the portion on the south side of Airport Road be designated as future branch Pioneer home or state use only, never to be converted to any other use. As this project grows, every bit of the land will be needed in a very short time at the rate of growth in this area. Then we will proceed to present the copies of the resolution and letter to the Historical Society and the Igloo at the next regular meetings, and on completion of their acknowledgement or rejection, we will then try to set up a meeting with Dr. Wood of the University of Alaska and consult the regents, the members of the regents of the University of Alaska, to get their support in completing, we hope, before spring, so we can start to do a little bit of work on this project. This is December the 12th, 1961, and this was my little personal comments as committee chairman of what I observed. This is Harry Hughes, Igloo 4.